It's time for What's Up with Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.
Morena, Prime Minister. I hope you're well. It is a busy campaign season. You were in Dunedin yesterday. Whereabouts are you at the moment?
I was in Dunedin, then Timaru, and I've just flown in from Timaru. I'm in Wellington for the day and then spending a bit of time around the region over Thursday and Friday.
Busy schedule then. So thank you for chatting to us.
Longest campaign ever.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, everyone, for that.
I think a few people will be having a long sleep on the other side of the 17th of October. We have got, of course, a few things to talk about in regards to Level 2.5 and the Level 2 extension across the country. So let's start with that. Obviously, a few people are a bit anxious about, moving in and out of levels and what that's going to mean in the future, because we know COVID's here to stay for a while. What is that going to look like for future wage subsidies? Is that something that is still a possibility that the government might bring back if we do need to go in and out of levels in the future?
Yeah, well, we've kept aside from our COVID recovery and response fund $14 billion, and our pledge there has been that will be used for COVID-specific recovery, rebuild and resurgence as it's needed, if it's needed. So yes, if we find ourselves in levels where businesses simply can't operate, as we did recently in Auckland, then you would see us looking to utilise that fund for those purposes. Keeping in mind, though, of course, our goal is with our elimination strategy, which we've kept the whole way through this, is to continually stamp out. Not every time we have cases will we necessarily need to escalate into lockdown. And the case we had recently, which was picked up through surveillance testing in our managed isolation facilities, where we had a health worker that tested positive, that was an example of where actually our contact tracing system should be sufficient to stop others being really curtailed with restrictions.
So the contact tracing seems to be getting to a really good speed at the moment, but there are some concerns about people not getting into managed isolation facilities fast enough. What is your thoughts around this, and how do we get that up to speed?
We put people into managed isolation facilities when we know, of course, that they have COVID, and often we're then working with them on who their close contacts are and who it is most appropriate to go into a facility with. So that'll be case by case. Of course, we have had in recent times situations where people have been tested and are isolating at home while they wait those results, and or have been positive and then we put them into isolation, who haven't necessarily followed the rules. So that's not necessarily an issue of isolation. It's actually, we wouldn't have had those problems if just people were really carefully making sure that they were following the rules and looking after themselves.
So is the advice there to just keep getting tested early, or what's the deal for people?
Well, in those cases, those were individuals that we had identified as close contacts. They were in isolation. They were proactively tested by us. And, of course, when you're in that situation, you need to stay at home. And once, of course, someone's identified as having COVID, then we move them into a managed isolation facility. So really it's just thinking about following those guidelines, and that makes the system work, but we can't do it if people aren't following those rules.
Now we've seen last night that two inmates and 20 correction staff at Auckland Prison in Paremoremo are in isolation at the moment, and this is something that has been flagged in the past as being a concern for prisons and rest homes and other large institutions that are either partly privately run or also have a lot of people in one space together. We know that this also is some of our most vulnerable communities housed in these facilities as well. What steps are you expecting prisons particularly to take to ensure that there isn't an outbreak and that people are safe in these facilities?
Exactly the measures that we're seeing here, so really proactive. So here we're talking about individuals who are contacts, I think, in this case. So we've got someone who we're with their family members then isolating the contacts of those family members. And so that's corrections being really proactive, really precautionary, and that's exactly what we want, because you're right. We don't want an outbreak in facilities, of course, where people are in close quarters and have close contact with each other. So corrections have been really careful all the way through COVID. It has meant that they've taken extra measures that have, in some cases, meant that we've had fewer visitation periods and so on, but that's all been about ensuring that we don't have COVID enter into our facilities.
Now, another thing that is coming to an end soon is the rent increase freeze, which came into effect back in March. And there's been a lot of concern, I know a lot of our listeners are concerned about this as well, about a potential for like a mass rent increase. What is your position on this? Are you worried about that being something that could happen in the next couple of weeks?
It is something that we've been worried about, and that's why before Parliament lifted, we already had in train amendments to the Residential Tenancies Act to ensure that we only saw tenants experiencing one rent increase every 12 months, so putting some limitations around that. Because of the lifting of the rent freeze, our view was we needed to bring that into force sooner rather than later, so we brought that forward, and so that happened before Parliament lifted, and it coincides with the lifting of the rent freeze. Do you know, I think the one thing I would say is that you know, some of the online discussion, you know, it's up to the Commerce Commission to follow up on whether or not that's in breach of the legislation, some of what we've seen online. But, you know, this really does a disservice to those who are landlords. You know, it feeds into stereotypes that, you know, I know there are a number of landlords out there who, of course, are worried about the well-being of their tenants and maintaining good, strong tenancy and relationships with their tenants. What we're seeing in some quarters just gives everyone a bad name.
And some of the concerns that we're hearing from tenants at this station as well is just that, you know, okay, it's good that perhaps there's only one rent increase within a 12-month period, but if that rent increase comes at the moment when you maybe have got, you know, very low funds or waiting out work situations and things, that's going to be perhaps very little comfort. What can we be looking at in the longer term, perhaps, for managing high rent prices in a pretty unstable economic situation?
Yeah, and ultimately, of course, these are private individuals who own homes that they choose to rent out. And so we can, of course, put in a framework that says, well, these are the parameters around what we believe is a fair system. We don't think people should receive continual increases. So that's where we've put the limits on the number of times, but not on the amount. The thing that really determines that being maintained as fair and reasonable is simply that people will lose their tenants or they won't find tenants if they are not ensuring that they're pricing their tenancy and their rentals in a fair and reasonable way. But the other thing, the expectation we have put on landlords, is that a home should be warm and dry. You know, it's hard to believe that was the circumstance where people didn't have those expectations, but we've changed those laws and requirements as well so that people can have a bit more security. We've made a number of other changes to try and increase security, but also that they have a decent home.
I just wanted to touch briefly before we let you go on Labor's education package announcement. One of the things that came out of this was the announcement that fees-free tertiary education is not going to be extended beyond first year. Why is that being scrapped, I guess? And it looks so like that from the outside.
So it is. You know, that was something that we as a Labor Party campaigned on. We said, look, we want year one to be free, and then we progressively want to introduce fees-free for additional years. Our view, however, has been that in the current environment, we want to put additional incentives and remove barriers to other parts of our education system. So, for instance, apprenticeships, vocational training. So we've made apprenticeships free. We've targeted certain areas of vocational training, such as in mental health, because we have high needs there in our employment market. And so that's cost us $1.6 billion to do that and to maintain and keep our apprentices in their jobs as well. So it's simply being a matter of having to prioritise in the current environment. But I am still really proud that we brought in that first year to remove that barrier for people.
Is it something that you'll be hoping to look to in the future, making university tertiary education more accessible?
As a principal, we want post-secondary education to be more accessible, whether it's polytech, whether it's apprenticeships, whether it's tertiary, whether or not it's university education. We want it to be more accessible. So we will keep progressively, as we're able to, look to improve that. But right now, we really just had to pick where we were putting that investment.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Prime Minister, and a very busy schedule at the moment. We'll talk to you again in a fortnight.
Ka kite.
Ka kite. See you later.
That was What's Up with Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.